I think that there's a lot of people in the startup industry, in the security industry, that, you know, come from a similar, hey, I built a cool thing and I just want to do the cool stuff around that. But actually being able to tell the story of it, being able to really articulate what's going on, particularly from a security perspective, is really challenging.
Cool. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of Upwards. Today, I have a very special guest with me. Izzy Lithgow is from Safe Advisory. She is their principal security communications consultant, if I got all that right. And she's going to be joining us on the podcast today to talk about security communications, what they are, what we can do to get them right, and some tips, tricks for you and your world around that. So welcome, Izzy. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Phil. Great to be here.
Very cool. So Izzy works for Safe Advisory, as I mentioned, who are a partner of Onwardly, works partners in crime in helping, you know, secure, makes the world a better place, helping people with security and privacy and really all things related to those topics. So today we're going to dive in a little bit around this subject of security communications, you know, what exactly that is, how we should think about that. Many people may not have even thought about this at all in their world. So we're going to Izzy's going to hopefully unpack for us what that means, how we can get this right, how we should think about it, how we can strike the balance between that and some of the other aspects of dealing with security. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Phil. I run Onwardly. Onwardly is a SaaS platform helping turn everyday folks into security superheroes by building security and privacy programs from scratch. It's a little bit about what we do. But onto my guest, Izzy, nice to have you on the show. First time on the show, hopefully not the last time. And we'll be doing, you know, more of these in the future as well. Tell us a little bit about you. How did you get started in this game? What's your background? Where have you come from? For those who may have not come across you before.
Yeah, cool. So my background is mostly in PR and communications. So I spent for about 15 years working across government agencies in PR and comms. And the last kind of six or seven, were focused specifically on cybersecurity. So at the start of my career, and really in those early days, I spent a lot of time working on crisis communications. So anything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I was there with my crew to kind of help tell that story to New Zealanders about what's going on. So anything from a natural disaster to a hospital having a power failure to people with Ebola entering the country and kind of anything in between. After about a decade of that, I started in the CERT team. So over at the Computer Emergency Response Team, which was brand new at the time. So was part of the establishment crew over there, kind of building up this security response group for all New Zealanders. So a really exciting adventure. I knew nothing about tech before I went in there. Enthusiastic but naive would probably be the best way to be described. spent 5 years with those guys building up CERT New Zealand, kind of really unpicking and, you know, in a real startup sense, actually, you know, making a new government agency from scratch. And how we talk to people about security, how we make it real for people so that they can improve their own security in their own lives.
I love that. And I love the work that you did with CERT, by the way, as well. You know, the sort of humanness that you bring to it, all of it is such a great thing, right? In the security world, it's often can be very cold and very clinical, and we need that kind of human voice. Tell us a little bit about what security communications or security comms really is. And, you know, it's a lot of us might have a vague understanding, but unpack this a little bit for us.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, particularly in the New Zealand context, security comms is really new, right? There's hardly anyone doing it. And there is more practitioners offshore, you know, obviously in the US, even in Australia, it's a much bigger presence. But really it's about how we talk about security. And that's captured in lots of different ways, just like communications practice in general. This is just that model boiled down to a really specific subject matter. So it's anything from PR and media and, stuff through to crisis communications, through to awareness raising and some marketing activities. So, you know, making sure that the security story makes sense for our staff and our customers, so that people understand their role in this pretty complex world, right? So it's just about bringing those skills and tools of communications into security. And I'm fortunate enough, you know, through my time at CERT and through my experience in the industry, to have also have some technical training. So it means that I can kind of play on both sides, which is, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's a complex topic. I mean, communications is one of those things that's not just one, you know, I'm an engineer by background, so I want things to be kind of working. This is how you implement it. But it's a bit more nuanced than that, I'm sure. What are some of the kind of the misconceptions and pitfalls that we might face around this topic and some things to look out for there?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, talking about how we're secure and talking about the incidents we face, that's both complex, but also feels like a kind of added extra sometimes. It feels like a kind of piece of bonus content that you could do on the site. Because, you know, like you said, you're an engineer by training. And I think that there's a lot of people in the startup industry and the security industry that, you know, come from a similar, hey, I built a cool thing and I just want to do the cool stuff around that. But actually being able to tell the story of it, being able to really articulate what's going on, particularly from a security perspective, is really challenging. And it can feel like, you know, it won't happen to me. You know, and I think security in general is often thought of that way, that, like, we'll build the features and we'll build the security later. And so that, you know, obviously is maybe not the way I would recommend doing it. But also it's, you know, you can be really single-minded when it's your product and to then have to go, oh, but what if this all goes terribly wrong? That's a pretty scary thought to be faced with. And so I think a lot of people, you know, like a lot of kind of hard and scary things in our lives, we kind of put it to the bottom of the to-do list and think that, oh, we'll deal with it when it comes to it. So I think that not giving it the attention that it needs up front, so that you're ready before something goes wrong, is a really critical thing. Yeah. And I think also one of the things that I talk a lot to clients, and I do a lot of public speaking and that kind of thing, is, you know, working with technical experts, a lot of people believe that if you want to talk about security, you should be able to talk about it in the jargon. You should be able to, you know, draw me an amazing network diagram and show me where all the danger might lie. But actually, security is for everyone, right? So we need to be making it accessible. And if that's not a skill that, you know, your devs or your engineers have, actually, it's worth looking elsewhere to find where you can bring that skill mix into your team so that people can understand what's going on.
Oh, I mean, that's such a great point, because if something were to happen, immediately everybody in the business is going to be asking what's going on. Everybody outside the business is going to be asking what's going on. And those are very different audiences, and some are very, very technical audiences, I guess, and some are very not technical audiences. And it's about being able to meet those people where they're at, but provide reassurance and understanding about, you know, the situation that's being handled, and I guess all those sorts of things, and very, very different communication styles.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's also, you know, when you're in a crisis situation, when you're in an incident situation, you know, you kind of do revert back to lizard brain, right? You kind of, you're shutting out the rest of the noise. And so even if you are really technically competent, actually, sometimes you just need it explained to you in the most simple way, you know, because no one ever complains that something's too easy to understand. And I think that that's, you know, that's a mantra I really kind of work by, is if we can boil it down, if we can make it make sense for more people, then why wouldn't we?
Yeah. And simplicity benefits everyone, even the people that know, implicitly know what's going on. Simplicity always helps those people as well as the end user. So you mentioned a little bit about, you know, going, and we sort of go into lizard brain when, if an event happens, it's sort of all hands on deck. So clearly, you know, preparation is a big part of this. Can you talk a little bit about how we should think about preparing for this? You know, some things that we can do there to actually handle, you know, maybe prepare and then even handle a crisis or handle a situation more effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the big things is just knowing it's a when, not an if. You know, I think a mindset change to security incidents happen to everyone, big or small, individual or organization. We're all going to experience these types of incidents in our lives. So really changing the thinking around, oh, it won't happen to me, into I'm ready if it does happen to me, will just make a big difference to your kind of your state of mind when that thing happens. You know, there's less panic, and less panic is the right amount of panic. But I think that, you know, the other things around experiencing breaches are just having that plan in place, right? If you know your product, which I'm hoping, you know, if you built it and designed it and that kind of thing, then you should be able to tell the story of what's happened to it and where the risks might lie, you know, and being able to have a really open and honest conversation with your team, with your leadership, if you have a board, with your board, so that everyone understands actually, you know, these are the risks that we could face, and this is what we'll do if we face them. Because having practiced before that happens, you know, so going through some tabletop exercises or even just talking it through means that you've got some muscle memory that you can call upon instead of it all being a fully fresh experience that you're working through. So having that plan, practicing it where you can, and I think also knowing who you can call for help. You know, security is a team sport, and so being able to call upon others, whether that's vendors, whether that's peers in the industry, whether that's, you know, the person at your coffee shop who you talk to occasionally, who I think might be a security person, having that list of people who can help you with stuff, that's super helpful. Because sometimes you just need a friendly voice on the end of the phone telling you that it's going to be all okay. You know, and I think that that's quite often a role of a comms person or of someone who takes up that role inside another larger role. It's being the duck, right? Calm on the surface and panicked under the water, making stuff happen. But yeah, just kind of, you know, encouraging others to take a breath, to understand what's really going on, and then figuring out what the next steps are to make it work out.
And indeed, and there's a lot of parallels to the, I guess, the incident response in the engineering world is basically the same thing. It's just a different sort of crisis. Maybe the product hasn't behaved, the breach is just not working. And sometimes that can be quite alarming to customers and stakeholders alike and things. And so one of the key things that we used to do, you know, in formal roles is you always make sure someone who's on comms is not the same person that's investigating the incident and troubleshooting that. You know, separate the roles is a great thing to do. So the person who's running comms is liaising with all the right people and liaising back with the technical teams or the teams that are actually investigating that, and it's all going like clockwork. If you're having to investigate something and run comms, it's an extra bad day at the office. So try to avoid that one. Can you give us some examples? You know, you could sort of, you know, make these as vague and as nondescript as you like. Where, you know, you in your experience, where you've seen companies maybe get this wrong, and then when you see companies maybe get this right, and how that really affected the outcome of the kind of end result. Yeah,
definitely. And I think that, you know, because I grew up in the public service, I think I'll always be kind of a public servant at heart. And in the public service, we often talk about, you know, being principles-based, right? Not being rigid, but having some principles to follow. And then I think that security comms is no different. And so for me, when I think about how organizations and individuals respond to incidents, it's about having those principles like transparency, like vulnerability, being honest, being clear, being accountable. You know, my former chief executive used to say that if anything ever goes wrong, you should own it, fix it, and learn from it. And I think that those principles kind of, you know, they boil up into that little kind of phrase. And so when we think about incident response, you know, and luckily or unluckily, we've had quite a few to look at across, you know, very public events that we've seen over the last 12 months, where things have gone well and things have gone less well. But I really believe that communications is the glue in your incident. You know, you can have the best technical response in the world, but if you haven't told anyone about it, or if you've told them about it in a way that's too complex for them, then they're not going to understand what's happened and that things are going okay or not okay, as the case may be. So, you know, there's been a couple of big financial and insurance breaches in Australia late last year and early this year that we've seen have been really challenging for the people who are affected. So there's individuals who have been affected by those incidents. Latitude Finance is a really good example where an incident has occurred. There has been some technical stuff going on, and there's also been some comm stuff going on, and there's also been some internal process stuff going on. And those things have seemed to have not connected, from a public perspective. I'm not in there, I'm not working with them, but I can see, just like everyone else, I can read those news stories. And there seems to be a real disconnect between the incident response, the operational team who have been running this, this system for however many years, and then the way that's been communicated to the public. So people are hearing all sorts of different stuff at different times, how they're affected, how much of their information has been affected. And it's really confusing, even for practitioners. Lots of people are impacted by this breach, so lots of security practitioners then in turn are affected. And even in the security community, there's a really wide-ranging conversation about, well, I don't understand what's going on. And these are technical specialists. They deal with this stuff every day. So how on earth is, my mum or Mrs. Miggins down the road going to understand how this stuff happens? And then when you think about good examples, there's a few good examples that I kind of pull out of my bag of tricks. I talk about this stuff a lot. One of my favorite ones is actually really old. There used to be, in times of yore, this app called TimeHop, which was a way to look through your previous social media posts from, we're just so self-involved. But anyway, we engage in this content. It's fun.
We love this stuff. Come on.
Yeah. And they had a breach. Now, TimeHop, because they were accessing your previous social media posts, they had access to all of your social media into the social media APIs. So there was a lot of potential data loss. And they put out this amazing, transparent state. They set up a web page. They updated it frequently with all the information, with the indicators of compromise, which went from easy to understand information at the top of the page right through to super technical detail. So you could consume as much of it as you wanted to. It was a fabulous example of understanding the audience, understanding who needed to know what was happening, but also understanding that people would want a certain level of detail. The other one that I really like, which is actually only just from last week, and this is a security company, so I do have high expectations of them, is a security company called Dragos. They're very cool. They do industrial control systems security, but they experienced a breach. And within 2 days of their breach, they had put out information. They were very open and honest about the response. They developed a timeline, and that transparency really shone through, which then gives them a greater reputation because people can, it's not a mystery. It's not, you're not wondering what's going on behind the scenes. Instead, they're upfront, they're honest, they're accountable, they're transparent. Yeah. And so that in turn builds trust. And that's hard, yes. Right? That's a super scary thing to do, to put your hand up and say, we probably did something wrong because someone got in, but here's what we're doing to fix it. So I think that, a little bit of bravery as well. It's a really
the impulse is to not say anything, isn't it? The impulse is to kind of just be like, nothing to see here. We're just figuring it all out. But that is really not acceptable, is it? We've seen organizations, I can think of some high profile ones in New Zealand here that something's been going on and people are talking about it in different communities and chatter, and like virtually nothing.
Yeah.
For like sometimes weeks. The response could, I believe, can be massively make or break for the reputation and the trust of that business. And, even in former roles myself, we made mistakes, we owned up to them, we fixed them. People are usually pretty forgiving. Like you say, if you're open, you're honest, transparent about what you're going to do to fix it, does a lot to rebuild that trust. In some cases, ironically, almost builds more trust than what was there before, because people go, oh, you are real and things are actually happening, and oddly enough can even make it stronger. So I love
this really area. Yeah, it shows humanity, right? Yeah.
You can't always control necessarily what happens to you, but you can certainly control what you say and how you respond. to the world. So, and you know, you've been doing this a long time. You know, there's always a balance between preparing for things like cons and just in general, you know, prevention techniques and things like that. And maybe so it's a little bit of a finger in the air situation, but like what percentage of time or how should people think about devoting time to, you know, preventative measures versus, you know, measures at the other end of the scale, other end of the thing, you know, with communication, things like that. Like it's obviously a balance. How should we be proportioning our time and preparation for these things?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the case is going to be different for everyone. Obviously, I feel like the catchphrase of security is it depends, which is both accurate and really unhelpful. But I like to think about it from a risk perspective. You know, obviously I started my career in media. So risk is kind of what I live and breathe. But it's a useful way to think about, you know, what are the risks that my staff, my company, my customers could face, and then applying those protections to your reputation in a proportional way. So if you're not collecting private information, if you're, I don't know what people make these days, they're all weird and wonderful, but, you know, the less human information you have, the less interaction with kind of natural people, then maybe the less requirement you have to think about how you're responding if their information was breached. And there's also the internal and external side of it, right? So some of it is about keeping your team up to date, is about your team knowing what they can do and what can go wrong. And, you know, if they can't come into the office or log into systems that day. And then the other side is your customers and what they need to know and how you continue to build trust with them. So it's about thinking about who you are and who your customers are first, to then apply that, you know, further through. But regardless of where you kind of find that proportional mix, there's always got to be some. The answer is never going to be zero. You know, finding space to have a really challenging conversation about what are we going to do if we get breached? How are we talking about everyday security controls with our people, with our customers? You know, that's big brain thinking. That's, you know, getting clever people around a table to talk about a big issue that could have severe damage to a company. You know, you've got to be pretty brave to have that conversation. But I think that, you know, like I said earlier, if you've practiced and you've got that muscle memory, it means that when something goes wrong or when something happens to a competitor or to a peer company, you can look at that and go, oh, if that was us, how would we respond to that? You know, so it's also about looking across the landscape, thinking about, you know, where other attacks and incidents are happening, where vulnerabilities are kind of, you know, letting someone through the door potentially, and thinking about, oh gosh, if that was me, how would I deal with that?
Yeah. And the answer is probably, if you're thinking, are we spending enough time on this? Probably the answer is no. Probably the answer is spend a little bit more time and make the time as well. It's challenging, you know, super busy schedules to get. Often it'll really keep people in the business together in one room. That can be hard enough in itself.
Yeah, and I think,
but selling, you know,
you can think about it in terms of, you know, the broader benefits of those exercises as well, though, right? If you've got a senior team together discussing a challenging topic, actually those skills for them working together as a leadership team, they apply in all sorts of different ways. So, you know, just because the topic of conversation might be security or might be a breach, that doesn't mean that you're not gathering really useful skills for other challenging situations as well.
Yeah, and 100% indeed. It will pay off almost certainly. You know, I think, you know, maybe it's hard to put an exact ROI, like dollar figure on it, but, you know, you might like to think about, like you say, the consequences of getting this really badly wrong versus you know, doing a reasonable job at it. And I think the challenge is one in the preparation as much as anything, you know, prepared for the response, indeed, not just for incident management, but rather, lots of other breaches. And I think what you touched on briefly there was around the internal communication challenges. Sometimes we think these are just a given, you know, that people will coordinate or use Slack, or use email, things like that. What if those systems are compromised, right? And how are we actually going to communicate here? And even if a company is sizable enough, or maybe even if it's not, helping everybody just get on the same page about what's going on can be a significant challenge, let alone outside
absolutely.
The business.
And I think that, you know, this is one of the great lessons of COVID, right? You know, it was a terrible time. We all had an awful time, but actually some great lessons from what we experienced as workforces, as individuals, through a really challenging situation. So, you know, sometimes the most useful thing you can tell your people is just do nothing. Just go watch Netflix for a few hours and we'll sort something out. And we'll let you know when you need to come back. Because actually we just need less load on the system. You know, so I think that there are experiences that we've had, whether through COVID, through natural disasters, through other incidents that we've experienced, that we can draw upon. Because, you know, not to come back to my principal's groupiness, but, you know, it's all the same stuff. It's just a different subject. And so thinking about how you can apply those skills that we've already got just in a different way to a different context, it also gives people a level of comfort because actually this isn't new, this isn't hard, this is just a different type of thing that I've already experienced before. And I think the other thing when thinking about your teams and responding to things is that not everyone's built to be an incident responder. You know, this isn't an inherent skill of being a human. And so sometimes it's also as leaders and as people who are in the middle of these incidents, being tough enough to say, actually, these are the people I need on my team because I know that they can thrive in this environment, as opposed to it being detrimental to them. You know, so there's a whole lot of conversations that come out of starting this incident and breach conversation that make your team stronger. You know, but it's great to have something timely to give you that springboard to start that conversation.
I imagine it's important to nominate that role of the incident responder preemptively, you know, basically,
yeah.
So people know if this happens, I'm on comms, we're not busy trying to figure out who it's going to be, it's me, or it's someone else, and they know what the plan is.
Yeah, and I think having, you know, this isn't comms specific, but it is about incidents, is having that structure that you fall into. So the structure that I tend to advise people to use is something called SIMS. It's the Coordinated Incident Management Structure. It's very, again, commonly used in government. But it came from the California Fire Service is actually what it's based on. So it's based on responding to a fire. But the way that it works is very structured, very hierarchical. Everyone kind of knows what their job is and know that they just do their job. And it just gives people room to breathe because I'm not worrying about what Phil's doing over in engineering because that's not my job. I'm over here, I'm doing the comms, and I'll get the information from them if I need it. But it just gives people that freedom instead of being worried about what everyone else is doing, which is a very common trait in an incident, to instead go, I'm going to focus on my backyard and I trust that the rest of my team are doing their job too.
Yeah, there's a reason a lot of great work comes out of these kind of critical services and institutions that really deal with this stuff. Yeah. You know, a lot to learn from them that are, you know, sort of orderly, you know, roles assigned, and even as hierarchy comes, like makes a lot of sense in these situations. So I'm sure we can learn a lot from that. This has been really good. Thank you, Izzy. I think we'll kind of come in for a landing there. Really insightful. Thank you for sharing this topic of ours. If you want to know a little bit more about this, please reach out to Izzy or myself. Izzy, you can find her on LinkedIn. She works for Safe Advisory. Pretty easy to find, myself as well. Wherever you're listening to this, we'd love to hear from you and engage with you a little bit further. So please do that. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate your time, and we'll see you next week. This is Upwards, the podcast for security and tech leaders, brought to you by Onwardly. Don't forget to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts, and join us again next time for more on security, startups, and leadership.